Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, June 12th. I'm one of those who believes birds are smarter than they're given credit for. Forget dancing parrots on YouTube, ever watched a crow? And so it is that, like many of you, I imagine, I'm most touched these days by the pelicans we're seeing on the newscast. I'm particularly struck by the shots of those who are being cared for, lined up in those boxes, shivering, helpless, scared, and amazingly well-behaved. That's what gets me, the last part. It's as if these smart birds are saying, I know I need your help and you need my cooperation. I wish I could tell you in a way you'd understand. I can't slobber you with kisses like a dog, but thank you. If it's not being shown on television, from time to time I pull up the oil spill live feed. Part of me wants to believe Mother Nature is resilient, and it's true, our vast bodies of water are. The Gulf, for example, is constantly being replenished by millions of gallons of fresh water from the Mississippi River, to cite one example. And the sun and microbes are continually dealing with poisons on the surface, effectively. We know that in most cases, as some surmised, including BP early on in the Deepwater Horizon disaster, that the damage would be limited from a spill that far out. That the oil would never make it to shore, and that it would be scooped up near the blast site. Then, as the oil kept gushing out before we were given access to the underwater feed, some of us had at least part of the story figured out. In fact, I just have to repeat what I wrote on Saturday, April 24th, 2 a.m. Eastern Time, from my hotel room in Beirut, Lebanon. Quote, the Transocean oil rig disaster 50 miles off the Louisiana coast that claimed 11 lives and left 4 critically injured could have enormous implications for energy policy in the U.S. should a feared major oil spill materialize. The industry needs to pull out all the stops to keep the Transocean BP well plugged up. That was Saturday, April 24th. On Saturday, May 1st, I wrote, I would just add to my original comments that the Obama administration should have known enough to come out in full force on Monday, April 26th, at the very latest, not Thursday. For this, they will pay a price at the polls come November. At least that's my first reading of the situation. From a political standpoint, it's a true nightmare for the administration. From a human standpoint, it's gut-wrenching. Once again, these good folks are going to need our help. That's what I wrote May 1st. I knew more about the potential consequences of this disaster from Beirut, and once I got home, than this sorry administration knew with all the resources at its disposal. Yet it was so typical when President Obama, thinking we're all a bunch of morons because we couldn't possibly be as smart as he is, told Matt Lauer of Today, I was down there a month ago because most of these talking heads were even paying attention to the Gulf. A month ago, I was meeting with fishermen down there, standing in the rain, talking about what a potential crisis this could be. Bull, Mr. President, no one blames you for the spill. Rather, it was your total lack of competence and understanding early on, including an instinct for what the people in the region needed to see. It's also about some of the bozos you have working for you, like Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen, who is a BS artist of the highest order. One of the first things you learn in the business world with your first job is not to fake it. When you don't have an answer, say, I don't know. This clown is incapable of that. There's a good reason why it's important to have some basic understanding of how much oil is coming out of this mammoth well. You have to know if you have a containment cap that can deal with the size of the flow and whether the relief wells could be compromised, let alone if you have enough resources to deal with it when it comes ashore. But from April 28th to May 27th, Thad Allen just parroted the BP line, 5,000 barrels per day, 210,000 gallons. I wrote the following on May 29, following my trip to New Orleans and Grand Isle. Before it was announced on Thursday and Friday that the estimate of the amount of oil that had been leaking was not BP's initial 5,000 barrels per day, but rather 12,000 to 19,000 and maybe up to 25,000, I saw others taking it to 30,000 to 40,000. With all the reading I've done on the topic, I think it's the latter. That's what I wrote May 29. Well, we're now saying 40,000, and there are some estimates of as high as 100,000. The other day, Thad Allen strode forth and proudly said of the capture operation, we're only at 15,000 barrels now, and we'll be at 28 next week. Of course, anyone who heard this and was watching the pictures thought, gee, I'm really happy BP is working up to 28,000, but didn't you say 5,000 for an entire month? Yet it looks like more continues to pour out than before. I also have to note that on May 29, I wrote that I believed, quote, the disaster represents an existential threat to BP. That week, Wall Street's analysts were estimating BP's liability to be anywhere from $12 billion to $20 billion. On Friday, Goldman Sachs hiked it to $70 billion. Let me just give those of you playing BP's stock or thinking about it some markers. April 20th, it's the explosion. BP shares close at $60.48. April 22, Deepwater Horizon platform goes down. Shares close at $59.55. April 23, a Friday, shares close at $59.88. By May 28th, BP stock was $42.95. June 4th, $37.16. June 9, $29.20. It's bottom, and then it closed Friday, June 11, $33.97. I'm not touching it. If we were to go back to 60 at some point, great. I would say a lot of positive things about the market in general. But this is going to play out for a long, long time in comparisons to Exxon and how its shares reacted in the years following Exxon Valdez spill have zero to do with today's catastrophe and its complexities. Further thoughts. Billy Nunn Gesser, president of Louisiana's Plaquemines Parish, told a Senate subcommittee on Thursday, I still don't know who's in charge. Is it BP? Is it the Coast Guard? I've spent more time fighting the officials of BP and the Coast Guard than fighting the oil. What is needed, he said, is someone with the guts and the will to make decisions. According to the Washington Post ABC News poll, 69% of Americans give the government's response a thumbs down. 2 weeks after Katrina, 62% found fault with the way President Bush handled the aftermath. And to interject another worrisome number, if you're a Democrat, 74% of independents take a dim view of the White House's response. The Justice Department announced it would conduct criminal and civil investigations, but to file criminal charges against BP, let's say, the Justice would have to find evidence the companies involved orchestrated cover-up, destroyed key documents, or lied to government agents. The administration's six-month moratorium on 33 previously approved deepwater drilling rigs in the Gulf could result in the loss of 3,000 to 6,000 Louisiana jobs in the next 2 to 3 weeks alone, and potentially 10,000 in the coming months, according to the Wall Street Journal. To put that in context, the entire U.S. economy created only 41,000 new private jobs in May. BP is being told by the administration that it is responsible for compensating these folks. I in no way defend Tony Hayward and his band of idiots, but this logic is absurd. In the interest of the truth, it also needs to be pointed out that there are a large group of charter captains in Venice, Louisiana, who have been known to spend their days sitting around at the marina earning $2,000 a day without ever attacking the oil. Sorry if some don't want to hear the facts. Heck, I told you how when I went to Grand Isle 2 days before Obama's visit there, my driver and I could easily see that boom was being laid without any rhyme or reason. President Obama, playing the role of Dirty Barack, told Matt Lauer that he was talking to fishermen and oil spill experts, so I know whose ass to kick. Wow, Mr. President, you really told them. I know a bunch of mullahs in Iran that got that message as well, and they're cowering in one of their underground nuclear facilities. Republican Congressman Eric Cantor told the Financial Times, quote, what we are seeing out of the administration has been utter outrage, blame, vilification, cursing on TV instead of focusing on stopping the gushing of the oil. How does that help? There is going to be plenty of time for demonizing, punishing, what have you, okay? When asked about the ass-to-kick comment, Cantor, a perfect Veep candidate in 2012, said, I have been somewhat dismayed by the lack of adult leadership. Of course, now our president is pissed off the British for his demonization of BP, including the White House designation of British Petroleum 12 years after it dropped the name. To be fair, however, Prime Minister David Cameron said he, quote, completely understands America's frustration with the company, though on Friday vigorously defended the company's importance to the British economy. He talks with the president shortly. Turning to Wall Street, there was only one major release of U.S. economic data, and it was rather telling and in keeping with my script. For the first time since last September, retail sales fell in the month of May, an unexpected 1.2% when a slight gain was forecast. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke spoke this week of a continued recovery, but it won't feel terrific. Unemployment would remain high. Lenders remain, quote, cautious. And looking longer term, the federal budget is on an unsustainable path. For its part, the International Monetary Fund said risks to the global economy have, quote, risen significantly. While legendary investor George Soros said, "We have just entered Act Two of the crisis as Europe's fiscal mess worsens and governments slash deficits, which in turn pushes the global economy back into recession. The collapse of the financial system as we know it is real, and the crisis is far from over," Soros said at a conference in Vienna. "Indeed, we have just entered Act Two of the drama." So what of some of the Euro nations? Germany's ruling coalition is prepared to slash 15,000 public sector jobs amidst spending cuts of $96 billion. Spain's government failed to broker new labor rules, and civil service pay is being cut 5%. Public sector workers staged a one-day walkout with more to follow. And the UK's David Cameron warned the public sector would bear the brunt of his budget cuts, this as factory production in April unexpectedly fell 0.4%. The battle between the EU and the US is quite telling. The US, as postulated by Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner this week, is about promoting growth, while the EU is about reducing budget deficits. The EU is hoping increased confidence in the financial system will trump worse unemployment. The US is hoping that in promoting growth, it can begin to grow out of the deficit without drastic spending cuts at this stage. Geithner is also urging the likes of Japan and China to promote domestic demand and not rely so heavily on exports. Speaking of Asia, while there was little economic data released this week in the States, China came out with everything but the kitchen sink. The market's cockles were warmed by news. Exports in China rose 48.5% in May, far better than expected just days earlier, while imports rose a like amount. But at the same time, the government's efforts to slow the economy are beginning to bear fruit. Bank lending dropped 17% in May, and May industrial production fell to 16.5% from April's 18.8% pace. But both are actually good news. Even property prices, up another 12.4% for the month, hid the fact that real estate in some major cities, are plunging. Prices, you'd think, will stabilize and eventually fall some. I staked my claim on the story a while ago in saying China would be able to engineer a soft landing. This week's figures bolstered the case. Whereas the economy grew a smokin' 11.9% in the first quarter, most expect GDP to come in at 10 to 11% in the second and fall a little further from there. JP Morgan still estimates a full-year growth rate of 10.8%. But some say that this week's inflation figures are worrisome as consumer prices rose 3.1% in May, above the government's target. I say my reading of things is that prices will stabilize shortly. Food prices, for example, which have been rising sharply, appear to be falling a bit. However, there is a huge developing issue in China that I fleshed out a while back, that being labor. I wish you could see a comment I made on a conference call with the CFO of my China holding back in April. I was increasingly concerned then about labor cost. With the high-profile strikes at two Honda facilities and the giant Foxconn plant, the latter being China's largest employer, Taiwan-owned, with 800,000 workers on the mainland who do contract work for the likes of Apple and Hewlett-Packard, the wage issues come to the forefront. There were reports at week's end that labor strife with some violence was spreading. In response, Foxconn not only hiked wages 33%, it is raising them an additional 66% for some workers down the road. Labor represents 10% of operating costs in China versus 50% in developed countries. Officials in Beijing are actually on the side of the workers. Why? Nothing scares them more than labor unrest, and it must be nipped in the bud. There's a fine line between fighting for one's rights, such as a living wage and adequate working conditions, and social unrest. This, more than engineering a soft landing, is where China needs to thread the needle. Can they do it? I'm not prepared to issue an opinion as yet. It certainly is as big an economic issue as the world faces today. Wages need to be hiked, and owners who won't be able to pass off all the cost will have to accept lower margins, as will shareholders, which is why your editor really cares, given my substantial holding here. This week, Foxconn's owner, supposedly the richest man in Taiwan, said the previously unthinkable. He was contemplating moving some production back home to gain more control. Stocks staged a solid rally, with the Dow Jones finishing the week up 2.8% to close at 10,211. The S&P 500 added 2.5% and NASDAQ 1.1%. It was about China, global growth, and stability in the euro for 1 week at least. That's all for now. I'll be back with you next Saturday for further details. Check out stocksandnews.com and click on the Week in Review column. Have a great week. Take care.